I'm going to be making the case that postmodernity, rather than dying and going away, has actually become the default setting for the way people think in many of the churches today.
Chris Roseborough, on his presentation, Postmodernism in the Church, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois.
As a result of it, it constitutes a significant threat against biblical, historic, Orthodox Christianity, because its epistemology is extremely irrational, subjective-based, and in fact, it's even a form of enthusiasm, God-withinism, that at the end of the day has as its project the eroding away and deconstructing of what historic Christianity teaches and confesses.
You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org.
Well, the two big stories that have been much in the news, the Kermit Gosnell trial and the story of three young ladies who were kidnapped and tortured for about 10 years, both involve the story of babies, children, being killed. That's a gruesome subject in and of itself. The press seems to be struggling with what term to use. Do they say fetus or do they say baby? And there seems to be some confusion. Joining us to talk about how the media uses these terms, Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
So glad to be here.
Is there a journalistic standard for when to use the word fetus and when to use the word baby?
Well, you would think there would be, and I thought there was for at least some uses of the term, but at the moment I really don't know what's going on. I mean, I can honestly say that. Let me give you just a little bit of journalistic history about this in terms of what used to be debated at copy desk and what is now in the news. Back in the old days, I hesitate to say the good old days, because there never have been any good old days on some of these topics, but back in the old days, I used to hear lots of arguments in newsrooms about what to call unborn children. Now, this gets us into theological terms, because in America, this is usually going to be debated in terms of religion, right? Ensoulment, you know, when does a child become a person? We're back into basically the arguments of Roe v. Wade. And in the midst of all that, the journalistic problem was that when you're doing direct quotes with people, when a pregnant woman talks about the life that's within her, she does not use the word fetus. I mean, you're almost never, ever going to see a woman refer to, well, my fetus was really moving today. So when you're dealing with direct quotes about issues relating to preborn children or unborn children, you have women just simply talking about their babies, or you have them talking about unborn children would be about as neutral a language, like, you know, I had dreams for my unborn child. You know, you have that kind of quoted. So inside quotation marks from real, live people, you had one set of words. And then in the same news story, in the paraphrase sections, where in the especially in the wake of Roe v. Wade, the journalistic term was to use the medical term, the accurate medical term of fetus. And a lot of people said that this created a kind of tense dynamic in these stories that made it look like the newspapers were actually being very biased. The papers were actually trying to use the term, the scientific term they were supposed to be using. The problem is when you started having newspapers, and there was evidence of this, refuse to quote women, or you would paraphrase a woman. So you're doing a story about a woman who, say, was in a car wreck, and they rushed to save the life of her child, unborn child, et cetera. And instead of quoting her saying, I prayed and prayed and prayed, and finally I can't describe the sense of relief I had when the doctor came and told me my baby was okay. And you have someone paraphrasing that woman as saying, she remembered lying in the hospital praying and was relieved when the doctor came and said the fetus was okay. And do you see where that would create tension? You know, and the family or the woman who's being quoted was saying, but wait, I didn't call my child a fetus. And the journalist would say, but we're supposed to paraphrase it so that the language is consistent with what we're supposed to be using as journalists. And, of course, what this is all about, of course, is the argument about whether or not the unborn child is a person or a person with rights. And unborn child and baby is way more sympathetic to the pro-life or anti-Roe cause than fetus. So do you see how that could result?
So in the recent coverage that we've seen of two very high-profile issues that can't avoid using one or the other word one way or the other, Kermit Gosnell's murder trial and the case of the triple kidnapping and the torture, and now it appears forced miscarriage and murder charges there as well in Cleveland. What do you see happening there?
Well, this is where the whole situation has turned into something else altogether, because the whole point of the trial, the Kermit Gosnell trial, the whole point of this thing was that workers in his clinic were reporting, and then you had also evidence, people who had done scientific tests on the remains of the children, of the infants. You had the whole debate was whether these children were born alive and then killed by the doctor, right? That's the whole point of the trial, or of that part of the trial. He did tons of other terrible, nasty, evil stuff, according to the jury, but that's the point of this language. So if the whole point is that he was delivering the children because it was easier to, frankly, get rid of them, cut them up, et cetera, outside the womb than inside, if the whole point is that they've been delivered and they were still alive, then why is the New York Times writing a lead about him killing fetuses? If the dictionary definition of fetus, it covers an unborn child to the moment of delivery. Do you see what I'm getting at? So now we've gone beyond attention about whether the scientific word is the word we should use versus the colloquial language that real people use when they talk, like unborn child. Now we have a whole nother issue. Now we have a whole other level of discussion and debate, and that is it accurate to call this infant a fetus after it's been born? Which, according to the dictionary, that's an inaccurate use of the word. Now, the journalists, what they're wrestling with is the fact that in the trial, you have the defenders of Kermit Gosnell saying that these children were not born alive, and thus they killed the fetus. The fetus was delivered, and then there might have been some convulsions and a little bit of noise, but they never were alive, so thus we're talking about fetuses. Whereas the entire case from the state and all of the testimony from the other scientific experts and the witnesses was these children were born alive, they were moving, they were making sounds, and then he cut their spinal cords with a pair of scissors. So what does the word fetus mean in this case? What it seems to mean is that if a child is undesired, if the child is not wanted, the scientific definition of fetus does not apply to news coverage. That's what a lot of critics were quietly saying or loudly saying behind the scenes. That's a completely different controversy than that old one I described for you, and it's a whole other level of kind of media bias issues and debate. What we actually saw in a couple of hours in the New York Times coverage of the verdict was we saw the fetus language change from the first draft of the story that went up on their website until the final draft, to where they were using more neutral language and actually quoting the words from both sides and letting both sides kind of use the language they needed or wanted to use, talking references to baby A, baby B, baby D, etc. Or they would use languages like staff workers reported that the children were born alive, the infants were born alive. They were quoting people with their own kind of biases intact, which I would say is the journalistically accurate way to go.
So that kind of anticipates my question, which is, what difference does the verdict make when it comes to how the New York Times or any other reputable or less than reputable media outlet uses that language? Since the jury has said these are murders, does that in some way obligate the journalist to accept their premise and say, okay, infants, babies?
Well, you would think so, but there's some precedent for the media in some cases simply making up their mind that they're not going to quote language they don't want to quote no matter what. For example, flashback about a decade to the debates in the U.S. Senate about the bill to ban, and the title of the bill was the Partial Birth Abortion Bill. The term partial birth abortion was in the name of the law. And we saw some papers who quoted the name of the law, which would be a perfectly normal thing to put in a story on First Reference. But we had other major papers that were refusing to quote the name of the bill because they didn't want to put the term partial birth abortion into play, which I think is fascinating. So I would predict that some news services will change to fit the language used in this verdict, especially if similar cases should come up. And I guarantee you right now there are activists on the side of the issue opposing abortion that are frantically looking for other cases to pursue. So yeah, I would not be at all surprised if more cases come up. Then you have other people, on the pro-abortion rights side, that are going to continue to use the fetus language as much as they possibly can. The whole question that I raised in a recent post at Get Religion is we see the same kind of issue emerging in the Cleveland cases, you know, in the kidnapping and torture cases, because everybody there is so fired up and so gung-ho to seek the death penalty for Ariel Castro, yet the irony of looming over that story from a journalistic perspective is, wait a minute, if you're seeking the death penalty, who died? At which point, the answer is the unborn children that he forcibly caused miscarriages. Well, they're using unborn children language because these children were killed by a hostile gesture, whereas if it was an abortion situation, would they have called them fetuses? What's the consistent journalistic rule in this case? And the answer seems to be there isn't one.
Terry Mattingly is our guest of Scripps Howard News Service. When we come back, can we cover these stories and ignore the religion angle? Stay tuned.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org, shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Issues Etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues Etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues Etc. What does this mean? 618 618- 800-223-8382.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Ascension and Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Pentecost Sunday, May 19th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Ascension and Pentecost sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about how the media uses the terms fetus and baby. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, to kind of wrap this together, you say that there really isn't any way to cover either the Gosnell story or the story of Ariel Castro and his forced miscarriages of these three unfortunate young ladies without the religion angle. Make your case.
Well, all I'm saying is that in the context of the United States of America and the culture that we have, you can't debate any subject about abortion without religion coming into the picture. Now, the journalistic debates about how we mean the word fetus may not involve theology, but the minute you start looking at the groups that are on different sides of the issue, you will immediately find religious motivations, religious content, even religious ideas, and of course the entire debate about whether personhood begins at conception or at what point during a pregnancy does the technical theological term is ensoulment take place. All of that is heavily theological. And the technical, the scientific, the media element that looms over all of this is that we live in the age of the three-dimensional neonatal cameras and ultrasounds and stuff, to where you have people rushing home from the doctor and putting up their first baby pictures. Isn't that what everybody calls them? I mean, everybody comes home and sticks that on the side of their computer, you know, after the pregnancy is confirmed. And here's the first picture of my child. Here is the first picture of my grandchild. People scan them and put them up on Facebook. Well, how do you refer to that as a fetus? You know, do people don't walk in the door and say, gosh, look at this image of my first grand fetus? I mean, that's not how people talk. Yet when you get into the politics of all this, you then have to go out of the human language and into this kind of political scientific language. And how do these two different ways of talking exist in the same story? I don't see that tension going away.
So will we have to, as in the case of the Gosnell verdict, wait for, and this will be now years probably, wait for a Ariel Castro verdict before the journalists decide which word they want to use?
No, we're going to continue to see people interviewed about this, and the emotions are running so high in Cleveland, they're not going to, that story's going to percolate here for quite some time. Now, the whole situation with Gosnell went away pretty quickly with him accepting life imprisonment, you know, as an older man. We'll have to watch what happens with any other subsequent cases that come up. But no, I think now we begin to watch this tension in Cleveland, which is, once again, the way I stated it in my post, if they're seeking the death penalty, who died?
This isn't the only time that this has been dealt with in the press. Kind of coming back to where we began, does there need to be a journalistic standard since these stories are going to come up again and again? Gosnell will not be the last terrible abortionist. Not that any of them are good, but he won't be the last terrible abortionist discovered and put on trial.
No, this isn't going to go away. And my standard, I said earlier that I don't think there is a journalistic standard. At Get Religion, our kind of rule of thumb is when in doubt, quote people. When in doubt, let people use their own language and their own descriptions and then put them into the stories and let the public see the conflict. Cover the conflict. Cover the conflict all the way down to the different language that the people use. Let them coexist in the same stories and let the public respond as it wishes.
What about that non-quoted section of the story where the journalist does have to decide what language do I use as opposed to what language did I quote the element of the story using?
When you're paraphrasing people,
yes.
What do you do? Well, at that point, I would simply paraphrase them in ways that are consistent with any direct quotes that you're using. And if you're writing a scientific story or if you're writing a story that's essentially about Planned Parenthood, to some degree, you go with the language that they're using and you keep it consistent. But if you're having a debate between the Secretariat of the Pro-Life for the Roman Catholic Church in America with a Planned Parenthood official, I say that you don't put words into the mouths of people on either side. Paraphrase them consistent with the language they're actually using.
Should we acknowledge, and it sounds like you're in favor of this, that both the term fetus and the term baby in media coverage are very powerfully loaded words? They have been carefully cultivated by both sides in the life debate for use at the proper time.
Nope. I think we acknowledge that tension is there. It's real. This is a topic in which it is impossible to use safe language. There is no safe language that exists. Acknowledge it, face it, deal with it.
If you were going to give some editorial advice to young reporters who are dealing with these things, say a journalism classroom, not unfamiliar to you,
mm-hmm.
What would be your 3 or 4 minute lecture on fetus and baby?
Well, I would do what I just said. I would attempt to allow people to use the language that they most naturally use. When things got tense to the point of being ugly, when things got stupid, was when we started putting words into the mouths of people. Now, I think more journalists would recognize that if you quoted a Planned Parenthood official saying, in paraphrase, "We believe women have the right to kill their unborn children if they wish," Planned Parenthood leaders would scream like crazy, right? Because that's not the language they would use. That sounds weird. It undercuts their cause to use that language. Yet at the same time, you don't have a Catholic nun who has dedicated her life to working with mothers of unborn children and then paraphrase her saying, "We know that God loves the fetus just as much as he loves, you know, a normal child." I mean, the nun didn't say that. When in doubt, trust people to use the words that express their beliefs and get that into print, because quite frankly, their beliefs are what are driving the story on both sides.
Here's a question, Terry. Do you think part of the element of the Gosnell blackout, that is the failure of the media to cover this story in a timely and appropriate fashion with the scope of this story, especially its political ramifications, which are still being largely unexplored, but do you think part of the blackout was simply journalists saying, "I don't know how to describe accurately what Gosnell did without the use of these dangerous words, fetus and baby"?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I also think that among people on the far left, moral left, there is a genuine confusion about when does an unborn child get human rights. There was a famous moment on the floor of the Senate when they were debating the partial birth abortion bill, when at that time Senator Rick Santorum kept pressing a senator, I believe is one of the senators from California, but I don't recall which one, and he kept pressing her over and over to say, "Does the child have full human rights after it's born?" And she wouldn't answer. And he returned to the question. So once the child is born, the doctor is obligated to try to save it, right? And she wouldn't answer. And this pressed on and on, and finally someone in the debate made the statement, like, I don't understand why we have to keep facing these questions. And Santorum said, well, I think we know why we have to face them. And there was this huge pause on the floor of the Senate, and up in the Senate gallery, a baby began crying. And everybody who was present there said that that moment captured the whole debate. And essentially what people were saying is, do children even have rights after they're born if the doctor and the mother don't want them to? And I think there's genuine tension and disagreement on the moral and cultural left over that question. And I think to some degree that's what's looming over this whole debate.
But Terry, I do want to get your thoughts here finally. Speaking of pressing politicians or pressing those who think about these things for answers, on a topic raised by one of your colleagues at GetReligion.org recently, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, she actually raised it in a column written for USA Today, suggesting some questions that the media could be asking President Obama. What are your thoughts on the failure of the media to seek the president's thoughts, even post-Gosnell verdict?
I think their actions are totally unjournalistic, and I have trouble justifying them just in terms of journalism and logic. You take the story where it goes. And just as I wish people had pressed George W. Bush with harder questions on the impact of his Iraq policies on Christian minority groups in those in that nation, that would have been a tough question, but I would have asked it. I think people should be asking questions that are just as tough on Obama at this point on similar issues or similar difficult issues. And this would certainly be one. This is a guy who had to vote in Illinois, or chose not to vote in some cases, over the Born Alive bill. This is a question he should be asked. And for sure, the next time any debate surrounds Planned Parenthood on this, and let's say how some of this relates to Obamacare, I definitely think the question is there and should be asked.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to look at the movie Iron Man 3. It's number one in the world. It's a huge blockbuster. It's the third, I believe, in a series of movies. It's apparently great fun. Does it have any substance? Does it have a theme? We'll be right back.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
Is baptism a mere symbol of rebirth? Is it a prize for attaining a certain amount of faith? The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for May, is Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism. It's written by regular guest Pastor Charles Lehman. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism, by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Lutheranism 101, Holy Baptism.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub, your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale, We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.